Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that really means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
And today we're going to talk about living in the age of instability. Or, what the heck was that? I mean, you can almost just say that whenever you turn on the radio or turn on the television. What the heck is going on? What's going on?
What does that mean?
Well, it's crazy. So Annie, what is going on? Why does it feel like everything's out of control?
Well, because I hate to tell you, but it is. And that is a good thing. So it may not feel like it at the moment, but all of these changes in systems and all these ideas that people are putting out there that just seem so crazy, they really are. And I think what has to happen is a sort of like a natural detoxing of things, because our culture has been pretty toxic for quite a long time. And frankly, some of the instability is that the things that have worked in the past no longer work, and so they're falling apart. And this is a difficult thing to accept. And that's why living as we do at Blue Rock Station makes for a really good life, because we're not buying into most of that craziness. After the election, it was very hard on people, and it was hard on us watching people suffer. But we kept saying, look.
You're talking about the 2016 presidential election.
Could have been.
Not to name any names.
No, could have been any election, though, because there's always a big transition. And I feel like for a long time, maybe most of my adult life, that we've been living a lot of the way we do now, we just haven't been aware how crazy it is. And then we get somebody like Mr. Trump to step up to the plate, and he just announces it every day, just how crazy things are. And people don't like that because they want to believe that everything's just the way it's always been. And we've had a long history of stable government and stable systems, but we don't now. We're in what we like to call a transition age, the age of instability.
Yeah, a lot of what I do, as you know, is I teach renewable energy. And we talk about that we are in the moment of transitioning from the age of fossil fuels to the renewable energy age, and that these kind of transitions happen. They seem to happen, I don't know, every 50 years, somewhere around there. The last one was really the post-World War II transition, that there were huge systemic changes in our society. Going back before that, you could look to the going from the agrarian age to the Industrial Revolution. That was a huge systemic change, and it changes everything from your political structure to your energy systems to the way housing is constructed, where people live. Everything about it transitions from what was to what will be, and we just happen to be in the moment that this transition is happening. We're going from what was, which was, as you say, stable, relatively stable government, relatively stable systems that were based on large centralized systems that were managed by the government.
They still are.
Yeah. Fossil fuel as our energy source, consumerism.
Well, the government said after really, World War II said, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, because we're going to take care of you from the cradle to the grave.
Yeah.
And I can remember my grandparents saying over and over, you know, they promised to take care of us and they are going to take care of us. And I can remember saying as a teenager to my grandma, I don't see how that's going to work in the long run.
Right. We see these systems beginning to collapse under their own weight. And that's unsettling. It's not good. It's not bad.
Oh,
it's just going to be different.
It's bad in that people who don't have a plan, people who don't understand how things work or haven't been taught how to think, it's bad, Jay, for a lot of people. People are already suffering.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things about instability, whether you think it's going to be the zombie apocalypse is about to hit and you're going to go out there and buy whatever Bitcoin or whatever you think, which strikes me as a weird thing to buy Bitcoin in a moment that's dependent upon electrons in somebody's computer, but that's not neither here or there. Yeah, or hoarding, you know,
guns,
rice,
stash of
guns, whatever.
Wheat, whatever.
I always said I'll just feed the guys who have the guns, and that way I don't have to worry about it. You know, I give them something they want, and they'll leave me alone. So.
I've never heard you say that, but now I get it. Okay.
It comes from a place of cowardice. okay, so how, if we do not know what's coming, but we know whatever is coming will be different, will be disruptive, how do you prepare for that?
Well, I don't think we prepare. I think we figure out how to have an everyday life. And this isn't preparing for anything because we don't know what's coming or not coming. And that just strikes me as being crazy. It's like this fear-mongering thing that our government seems to love to promote. I think what we do is we say, look, what has value for us in our life? And if we can remove shopping, the consuming, and we can say, look, one thing that has value is how we raise our children and the time we have with our children and how we'd like to have more time with our children. Our work that we do to earn a living. The food that we eat that helps us to stay healthy or not healthy. Our relationships with other people. How we practice our spiritual beliefs. How we get education and information. How do we evaluate all of those things on a kind of a long list? And then how do we want those things to be in our lives? How do we incorporate them? And that's where we have to come from. Instead of, oh my God, what am I going to do when the government collapses or bitcoins become worthless or, you know, Mr. Trump shows up at my door? These are all scenarios that really have very little to do with our
lives.
Do
I get to pick which of those three I would like to have happen?
Yeah, well, that's no, you don't. That's the point. No, you don't, because we have no control. That's part of the instability.
What you're saying reminds me, there was a fella I used to work with down in Mexico. His name is Roberto Sanchez. That's
such a good name.
Such a good name. He is a good fellow as well. But he used to say, because of the instability of their system in the time that I was there, he said that all his money he will invest in education and travel because no one can take those away from you. And I thought, that's some wisdom there.
Yeah. Or invest in other people. I mean, that's one of the things that we've always been really good at from the time we've been together. And sometimes there was a real payoff that we didn't see coming. We weren't doing it for the payoff, but it did pay off because those people showed up or helped us in some way or did something really amazing in their own life that made us really feel good. So I think the real issue, though, comes back to the first step is what is value? What value do you place on the things in your own life? And then what do you want to do to make that happen? That's the plan. But then thirdly, we're moving to what's called local distributed systems. And that's one example that we talk about sometimes is the idea of community solar, where people, their houses or their buildings are all coming together for one solar array system instead of each house or each building have an array on its own. And so how could we then, that third step in wanting to have a more calm, drama-less life, is how do we create these different systems on a local level? So we move from this whole large centralized system that we operate under with energy and all kinds of things, you know, even as much as the box stores, the big box stores. How do we move from Target to I don't know, the general store downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of the megatrends that, you know, we've discussed and we see happening. We see it in energy, as I said, with localized systems, because the grid as it exists, it's the largest machine ever built by mankind. It's hanging on by a thread.
Well, it's past its sell-by date. I mean,
sure.
All the parts are well past their point of no return.
Right. So these systems simply, you had mentioned that the government, the federal government, made a contract with the citizenry, whether overt or hidden. It was a contract that said, you give us control and we will take care of you. Mm-hmm. And they took that control away from churches and communities and families. And they said, we will provide for your retirement, for, you
birth
know,
birth and
disaster.
Your babies, your yeah. milk being pure.
That's right. Disaster yeah. relief, all of these systems that had been local in nature. Well, we're seeing that the government's not very good at upholding their end of the bargain. And so there is a movement back towards the localization. We see that with farmers markets, with distributed energy systems, with localized ordinances, because the federal government seems incapable of coming up with a coherent strategy. So I think that's going to be one of the mega trends that we're going to be dealing with is dealing with this age of uncertainty will require many, many different solutions, all very much tailored to the local environment, where it's happening, by the people who it's happening to. And that just makes good common sense. Once again, when you could point to this and say, oh, look, the country is collapsing. This is terrible. Or you can look at it as finally, we're starting to have a rational approach to very complex issues that not every community wants to deal with a one-size-fits-all solution.
Well, we're also entering into an age of great opportunity where all of these solutions that we need that can really work require a lot of information and technology. And we often say to our engineering interns, you know, you're the people we're going to put our hope and invest in, because if you can move more to a sustainable way of thinking, you're the person going to make the difference, and that's where the opportunity is. So lots and lots of opportunity. And I think what is happening to people right now for the majority is they're sitting there going, wait a minute, they're supposed to be doing this for me or that for me. And part of that challenge is that we have a lot of people coming out of our education system that haven't been taught how to think. And so they kind of lose their ability to be clever or creative because they're waiting on somebody to do it for them.
Well, that's a dangerous thing to say at a university radio station.
Okay, so. Well, I went to college here and I did manage to graduate. And
and did you learn how to think?
No, and there were many times that I felt like I should have been one teaching the class because I had lived it versus the person just reading it out of a book. But that doesn't mean all education or all people in education are doing a bad job. I'm saying particularly in the lower grades, there are some real challenges. And with a citizenry that can't think, so you have like Hurricane Katrina. I'll never forget, we had just come back from living in Europe and that hurricane hit. And we were visiting some friends, so we would see, we had a TV in our apartment. It was horrible. You watched all the time. But anyway, that's another story. And so we would see the news. And people were sitting among all this garbage. I mean, hundreds, maybe thousands of people. And they were saying, you know, we don't have anything. We don't have clean water. We don't have any place to go to the toilet. And right there was sitting all this plastic and containers where they could have collected water. They could have heated the water just with the sun. But they didn't. They not only didn't have knowledge, but they lacked the ability to be creative and understand everything was just sitting there. They just needed to make it happen.
Right. So that sort of brings up another of the mega trends about the safety net
yeah.
that is being cast has to be local in nature. And there's nothing more local than you yourself, you know. I mean,
let me say, just to add to that caveat or make that caveat to that, is nobody's coming to help you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but it's the truth. Nobody is coming to help you.
Right, which then means that regardless of what this disaster, whether it's a natural disaster or an economic disaster or a disaster even of your own making in your own family, the resilience that you know, the recovery is going to be yours or your neighbor's to address.
Well, and so I think about Flint, Michigan. That's a good example, is they're not coming. They are absolutely not coming to help them. And it doesn't matter what people do. And so how do you fix that? I don't know. But it is definitely something locally that could be broken down into small increments and dealt with.
You are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you that it is the end of the world as we've been talking, as we know it, and
thank God.
Yep, thank God. So it is the end of the world as we know it, and we're saying, it sounds a little you know, gloom and doom when you say, okay, with the next disaster, whether it's personal, whether it's societal, there is no cavalry coming to your rescue. That sounds a bit disheartening. It sounds a bit defeatist. But the reality of it is, you know, it's the reality. And you need to put yourself in a position to deal with things as they happen. All the wishing for someone to come in and clean up your own mess, it's just not going to happen. Our society cannot address the scale and the frequency of problems that we're creating for ourselves. It's sort of the collapse of the large centralized
systems. That's right. But we can't live in fear. This is something that really manipulates people. We have to say, look, how do I want my life to be today? So an example might be that I have a garden and I want to grow some food in the garden. I don't want to grow all my food all year, but maybe my neighbor has a garden too, and maybe that neighbor is really good at growing certain things and you're good at growing certain things, and so you work together. And maybe you also collect some water off the roof, so you have backup water at least to flush a toilet if the water system goes down, which happens a lot in urban areas. So again, it's working with other people, but it's also identifying resources you already have. But it's not coming from, oh my God, what is going to happen? It's saying, look, I want to have a rich life. I want to feel good about what I do. That's a whole different mindset. And I think it's really easy to fall into that, you know, we better be prepared, you know, the apocalypse, something, zombie apocalypse is coming. And this is baloney. It's absolute baloney, because it's not the way you're going to have a happy life.
Well, I think, too, if you have relinquished control over some of the things in your life that are required to live, like your water source,
your health, this is a big one.
All of these things that your great grandparents or your grandparents, they dealt with them on a daily basis. They had enough knowledge and systems in place to deal with the occasional emergency. What we're really saying here is, in an age of uncertainty, emergencies will happen. It's not a question
of it's just part
will
of life.
They happen.
Yeah.
They
We're
will.
Going to.
You don't know what they will be, what form they will take. So why not live your life in a way that prepares you to at least get by for a while, you know?
Well, or making sure that your house faces the right direction when you rent or you are going to build something. And so you're able to collect sunlight so it heats on the days there is sunlight. It's going to heat the house naturally. I mean, these are such simple little concepts.
Mm-hmm. Well, getting out of the whole zombie apocalypse mindset here, there are some other trends we can look at when we talk about how everything is changing. One that we were chatting about the other day is when things cost so much, like cars, even lawnmowers, why do we feel like a need to own everything?
I've asked myself that all my life.
Can't we do what they taught you in kindergarten.
Sharing.
There we go.
Well, most people are not that nice to share with.
Yeah, so. But I think this will be a trend. We see it with Uber, for instance. I don't need to own a car anymore. I can just share. I can ride share. I can share, you know, Airbnbs. So we're seeing it. We're seeing just the edge of it. But why not share a lawnmower with your neighbors instead of everybody going out and buying a $2,000 riding lawnmower?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a new project in Athens called Makerspace, and there are makerspaces throughout the country so that you can – it's not running a lawnmower, but you can go and use pieces of equipment like welding equipment or equipment you would use for carpentry and different things like that. I think they're 3D printers. So you can be a member and you can use it under different circumstances, or you can just pay to go there once. And I think this is the beginning of how we move more towards away from individual ownership of large, expensive things. But in the future, when energy is free, everything's going to be expensive. And so the people in the 1% are going to have all that they want, but they can only buy so many things. And the rest of us are going to have to share. We're not going to have a choice. So why not do it now when it's really, you know, so much better. I don't like to be told what to do, so I would appreciate sharing with others. But it also comes with, like, food and clothing, like when I had talked about before about having a birthday swap. So my friends come with clothes and lamps and books and CDs and all these things they don't want, and we share and trade, and it's a fun day. So all of these things have potential to create opportunity for people. I mean, whoever owns a makerspace has the potential to earn money from that. Of course, you've got an infrastructure outlay, but over time, people are going to want to use those pieces of equipment, and a lot of people can't afford to buy them.
Well, with every changing trend, there are going to be winners and losers, and each of these ideas is an opportunity for someone, you know, in the economic realm to make a lot of money. There are going to be those other folks who, you know, other traditional industries that are going to fall by the wayside. I mean, when was the last time you saw a Blockbuster video store and places like that?
They have Family Video now.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
I don't know these things.
I don't go. I've never gone. But
are they owned by Netflix?
I don't know who owns them. Individuals.
So another thing to consider is, you know, climate change has been out there in the realm of discussion, and it's usually in, oh my gosh, everything's going to be destroyed, sea levels are going to rise, you know, the desertification of Iowa or whatever it is. But what about the economic impact of just the everyday living of dealing with climate change? I mean, we've noticed a lot of changes in bugs. You know, that right there is kind of an interesting...
In insects, you mean?
Yeah, bugs, not FBI, you know, monitoring us.
We
give them all the information they need on Facebook. But, you know, you can see, like, with not, you know, common ones like termites, but we see with the emerald ash borers coming through.
Or livestock and parasites.
Livestock
superbugs,
parasites.
Lots of superbugs for people and animals.
And traditionally we've dealt with these through antibiotics, through pesticides. But these insects, of course, are very resilient, and they will overcome these big one size fits all. So we're going to start to see a decline in our economic well-being just to stay even, dealing with all of the critters and all the parasites and all of the water issues, changing water mm-hmm. patterns, dealing
flooding.
With heat, cold,
yes.
floods, natural disasters. So I think that's something we just have to kind of build into our expectations, that climate change comes with its own
costs. And we're paying the costs now. It would be interesting to see what an economist would say, but we have talked about this numerous times, and we think that about 10% of annual income for any person is going towards paying for some of these costs that are associated with the climate change that we're looking at. Because even with insects, one of the things that we might do differently, I always like to say that if we're going to have any kind of growth, any kind of plants around, we need to have bad insects so the good insects have something to eat. But we're seeing fewer and fewer insects. Even at our farm this year, we saw, we normally have hundreds and hundreds of carpenter bees, and this year we saw two. So there are a lot of changes that implies are going to happen as well with heat and with cold. You know, the costs of things being hotter, with things being colder, with things flooding. And so how do we prepare for that? Well, we recognize it's an issue, and we have to learn to live with a lot of it, because we're not going to stop the ocean from getting more water in it. We're not going to stop the temperature from being hot or cold when we don't want it to be, or definitely we're not going to stop insects. They know how to just change their whole DNA so they can come after us. So we have to create plantings. We have to create different kinds of buildings. And these are all really wonderful solutions. They're aesthetically pleasing. They can provide us with food, raise food in the house, raise food in a, you know, a hoop. There are so many opportunities here. It's just unbelievable. We could spend 2 days just doing nothing but listing the opportunities that climate change is going to bring for people to earn a living and live a richer life. And some of it is because it's going to force us to change our priorities and force us to say local and family and spiritual connections have more meaning than how much money you're paying me.
But again, in this transition period, as we're experiencing for the first time the effects of climate change in its various and sundry faces,
I just want to say it's not the first time. It's happened over and over and over, and we act like...
Yeah, but it's the first time I've been experiencing it.
Oh, okay, there. That makes more sense.
And that's all that's
that's
important.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, that's
Jay Warmke is experiencing it now.
Climate change, and now it's a pain. You know, I don't care about the ice age. I could care less about that. So, but another thing that might... We really need to look at this because as large parts of the world have experienced climate change, we start to see... population shifts,
migration,
and that's become a big issue politically, both here and overseas. But that has always been perceived as the others, those people who live outside our country, trying to get into this, you know, blessed land of opportunity.
No, but what if those people from Iowa, those others, or Oklahoma decide they're going to come and live in Ohio? We're not going to like that.
I don't mind the Iowa ones, but the Oklahoma people, you know, they're trouble.
I'm worried about the ones from South Dakota. Well, and they got a funny accent.
Yeah, this brings up a whole nother issue because when we're looking at moving from one country to another, that's one issue. But we could be finding ourselves looking at domestic migration and the pressures that puts on local communities and the resentments all the way back. I mean, our biggest example of that was the Dust Bowl of the Okies,
right.
You know, moving to California.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of problems associated. And I think we're just about to see that all happen all over again. Not necessarily the Dust Bowl in the Midwest, but it'll be something.
Something like that.
We see the New Orleans people moving to Houston, you know, and that caused a big issue. So this is another thing just to be prepared of. Technology, going to make a lot of changes. A couple of the cool ideas, I think. One good, one bad. You know, we already complain about cell phones, and we refer to those as, you know, the rectangle we see.
What we really complain about is lack of broadband.
Well, okay. But people who immerse themselves in their rectangle, looking at these smartphones and not engaging in the world as it is, but looking into this. Well, when we begin to see the perfection of virtual reality, I think we're going to long for the days of the rectangle, you know. People will completely immerse themselves in an alternative universe. And then is there a motivation to solve the problems of this universe when you can simply mentally escape to whatever alternative universe
you
choose?
But we've always done that. Mental health is a big issue in this country, especially right now. With all the things that are unstable and the drug use and the promotion of opiates. And honestly, I think we don't have a good model to deal with it, and we're going to be faced with an even worse model.
Well, and in the positive realm, we've talked a lot about, as people do online shopping, is there any need for packaging? You know, we begin to get virtual packaging. Do you really need the bubble wrap around things? Can't we get back to a more simple day?
Well, if the drone delivers it, it won't matter.
Yeah, I'm looking for the drone. I'm still waiting for my flying car, so I'm not that keen about drones yet. I was promised them by George Jetson.
Was it red in a convertible?
Yeah, Mercedes 350 SLS for super cool.
Okay.
All right. Well, you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. Thanks for spending just a bit of time with us this week talking about sustainability and sustainability issues. And as your grandmother must have told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
Play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and eat your darn veggies.
Yes, I'd rather eat marshmallows. So anyway, until next time.
That's true.
We'll see you later. And her children will be healed. Come and see the light, darling, blossom.